The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Vision News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the NCRS, a North Carolina Reading Service Roundup, Charitable Giving Made Simple. From the Fayetteville Observer, by way of Disability Rights NC, foster kids are being sent to psychiatric facilities. This involves a paywall, so I can only read you the thumbnail. ACB has scholarships open for the 2021 to 2022 school year. AFB has an article about the Library of Congress acquiring their rare book collection. The Action Fund, American Action Fund, has the 2022 Braille Books selections. From Cool Blind Tech, we have Airbnb updating their features. From how to add legacy contact info in iOS 15.2. From Tech Explorist, UC Davis has discovered the function of neuron protein clusters in the hippocampus. I might not have time for that one, but I'll try to get to it. So let's get started. From the Fayetteville Observer, decades of failed leadership by the NC Department of Health and Human Services has resulted in foster children being confined to facilities round the clock, despite a clinician determining that it was not medically justified. It is a loss of liberty, said Junu Noel Andrews Costa, COSTE, an attorney with Disability Rights North Carolina, an advocacy group. Psychiatric residential treatment facilities are being used as a place to just put a child. Children aren't socks to be put away in a drawer. They are growing and developing individuals who need love and support in a community that is equipped to care for them, whether through foster homes or mental health care. Kids who are hashtag locked away are robbed of their childhood, and the state is responsible. It's time to hashtag bring NC kids home and invest in the community services and resources they need to grow up. Hashtag safe at home. The resource website for that is https://www.fayetteville.com/in-depth/news/2021/11/16/north-carolina-foster-care-system-places-children-in-psychiatric-institutions/618402-1001/. From the NCRS, North Carolina Reading Service Roundup, Charitable Giving Made Simple. Round up your transactions to the nearest dollar and donate the sum at the end of each month, or skip the roundups and donate the same amount at the end of each month. There's a microphone sign that says donate. A special NCRS receiver can be purchased for a listener with a $70 contribution. There's a lock image with secure platform. Donations processed through Roundup app are completely secure through Stripe payment processor. There's a light bulb image. Scan QR code with the camera app to donate with a QR code prominently displayed 2 inches by 2 inches. Round up your spare change and help support NCRS. For more information, visit ncreadingservice.org. From acb.org, ACB's scholarship program application period is now open. The application period will be open from November 1st, 2021 through February 14th, 2022. The American Council of the Blind's ACB's scholarship program was established in 1982. The American Council of the Blind, ACB, and the American Foundation for the Blind, AFB, have partnered together to offer educational scholarships ranging from $2,000 to $7,500 for those attending a technical college or as an entering freshman, undergraduate, or graduate student. This program awards students with scholarships to help with post-secondary education financial needs, such as tuition, fees, room and board, and other additional costs associated with adaptive technology. To be eligible for a scholarship, applicants need to be legally blind, maintain a 3.0 GPA to be eligible for most scholarships, be a full-time student as well as students who work 32 or more hours per week and attend college part-time, and be involved in their school and local community. To find out more, visit https://acb.org/scholarships. To find out more, please join the Scholarship Launch Information event, which took place Monday, November 8th, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Time, 3 p.m. HT. That would be probably Hawaii time. Whether you've applied previously or are considering applying, join the ACB Scholarship Committee for an overview of the application process and have your questions answered. If you're a previous scholarship winner, we'd love you to be on hand to share what's worked for you as well. For information on how to attend this call, which is over, join the community events list by sending an email to acb-community-events plus subscribe at acblists.org. From AFB.org, Library of Congress acquires rare book collection from American Foundation for the Blind, Dateline, Washington, D.C. The American Foundation for the Blind, AFB, announced the Library of Congress has acquired the M.C. Miguel, M-I-G-E-L, rare book collection, comprised of over 750 titles, spanning from 1617 to the 20th century. Many of the volumes are seminal in the blindness field, offering descriptions of changing social attitudes, innovations in teaching methods, and care for those with vision loss over the past 300 years. The acquisition of these titles and booklets by the nation's foremost library is a wonderful step forward towards disseminating the history of blindness and recognizing the importance of disability history, said Kirk Adams, Ph.D., AFB President and CEO. These volumes reflect centuries-old stigma surrounding blindness and society's efforts at progress in the form of work opportunities for blind men and women, innovative teaching methods, and the twists and turns in the development of tactile books. The library's acquisition of this collection reinforces our long-standing commitment to serving blind and disabled communities, said Jason Broughton, Director of the Library of Congress's National Library Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. NLS works daily to ensure that all may read, and the Miguel collection provides an excellent historical foundation as to why our work has been and continues to be so necessary. The collection was born when Robert Irwin, AFB's first director, prioritized the creation of a definitive reference library for the blindness field. In 1926, AFB's Board of Trustees granted him $1,000 to start the collection. Materials were donated from around the country, and the library grew. AFB in 1929 hired a full-time librarian, Helga Lende, L-E-N-D-E. The collection was compiled primarily by Lende, who then traveled to Europe, acquiring volumes for the organization. As a result, there are texts in English, French, Spanish, German, Italian, Esperanto, Dutch, Polish, and Norwegian. Proceeds from the sale of the rare book collection to the Library of Congress will go towards supporting AFB's Journal of Visual Impairment and Blindness, the premier professional resource for information and research about visual impairment. Highlights from the M.C. Miguel Rare Book Collection. The earliest book in the collection was published in France in 1617. It concerns Louis Grotto, an Italian ambassador and orator who was blind, and is titled Les Harangues de Louis Grotto, Aveugle d'Adri Admirable en Eloquence, the speeches of Louis Grotto, a blind man famed for his eloquence. The first landmark book in the library is Denise Diderot's Letter sur les aveugles à l'usage de ceux qui voyant, a letter regarding the blind for the attention of those who see, which was published in 1749. Considered radical in its day, the book considers how the intellect is dependent on all five senses, and what happens when it is deprived of sight. Diderot claimed that the blind mathematician Nicolas Saunderson had stated that he would believe in God only if he could touch him. The possible implication that Diderot was denying the existence of God resulted in Diderot's imprisonment in Paris for 3 months. Saunderson's own, The Elements of Algebra, published in 1740, is also in the collection. Saunderson was an English mathematician who became blind as an infant. He was subsequently elected a professor of mathematics at Cambridge University. Works in the collection also highlight the evolution of tactile methods of reading. Beginning in the late 18th century, independent reading and study by people who were blind was becoming more widespread. The collection contains two copies of the rare first edition of Essai sur l'éducation des aveugles, Essay on the Education of the Blind, by Valentin Huy, H-A-U-Umlaut-Y. Published in Paris in 1786, these titles were printed using embossed letters of the French alphabet. That same year, Huy followed l'Institution des Enfants Aveugles in Paris, the first school for blind children, and later founded the first school for blind children in Russia. His pioneering work led to the creation of schools in many European countries. Huy's work marked the origin of modern methods in the education of people who were blind. Another tactile innovation represented in the collection includes Moon type, invented in 1845 by William Moon, an Englishman who became blind at 21. This embossed printing used the outline of letters derived from the Latin alphabet. The system was considered easier to use than Braille, but less compact. The rarest book in the collection is Précis de l'Histoire de France, a summary of the history of France, published in Paris, 1837. This volume is one of only three known copies of the first edition of the first book embossed using the Braille system, which uses dots rather than raised letters of the alphabet. The other two copies of this rare book are located at the Perkins School for the Blind in Boston and at the Huy Museum in Paris. For additional information, see also the Library of Congress press release. About the American Foundation for the Blind. Founded in 1921, the American Foundation for the Blind, AFB, is a national nonprofit that creates a world of no limits for people who are blind or visually impaired. AFB mobilizes leaders, advances understanding, and champions impactful policies and practices using research and data. AFB is proud to steward the Helen Keller Archive, maintain and expand the digital collection, and honor the more than 40 years that Helen Keller worked tirelessly with AFB. Visit www.afb.org. From actionfund.org, American Action Fund announces the 2022 Braille Book Selections. Subscribers will receive Braille versions of books in popular children's series. Dateline, November 3rd, Baltimore. The American Action Fund, AAF, for blind children and adults will soon begin distributing free Braille copies of titles in three popular children's book series as part of its Free Braille Books program for the calendar year 2022. The program serves over 4,000 blind children in the United States by sending them a free Braille book to keep each month, and focuses on producing popular books and series that have not previously been produced in Braille. For 2022, the Action Fund specifically selected books that include a range of critical times in history. Starting in January 2022, a new book in one of the following series will be sent to program participants. Potts Ability Series, Morris Flip Sound Machine by Liz Cooper. I Survived by Lauren Tarshish, T-A-R-S-H-I-S. History Smashers by Kate Messner. For over a century, the Action Fund has been dedicated to the advancement of Braille literacy among blind and deafblind people, said Mark Riccobono, Executive Director of the American Action Fund for Blind Children and Adults. Our free Braille books program for children furthers this mission by allowing kids to acquire and read the same books their friends are reading. Reading is also critical to learning, and the books we have selected for 2022 will help blind children learn more about history. We believe these books will contribute significantly to the Braille skills of these young readers, as well as their understanding of how historical people and events have shaped our world today. I am delighted to share more of the Potts Abilities series in Braille that features a tale of adventure, diversity, and problem-solving with strong disabled characters, who are often marginalized in children's literature, said Liz Cooper, author of Morris Flip Sound Machine. For more information about the American Action Fund's free Braille books program, please visit https://actionfund.org/free-braille-books. About the American Action Fund. The American Action Fund for Blind Children and Adults, a nonprofit organization founded in 1919 and headquartered in Baltimore, helps blind people throughout the United States through programs and initiatives emphasizing Braille and tactile literacy, education, and independence. For more information, visit www.actionfund.org. From CoolBlindTech.com, Airbnb updates accessibility features for its accommodations, published November 15th. Airbnb has updated its search filters and accessibility review process with the goal of making it easier for people with disabilities to find accommodations on its platform, the company announced in a blog post. How does the search filters and accessibility review process work? Hosts can now submit pictures of the accessibility features of their homes, and a specialized team of Airbnb agents will review them to determine if they're suitable for people with disabilities. On its accessibility review page, Airbnb says that this team works with engineers, designers, and others across the company, but doesn't specifically state whether they're trained or how they're qualified to recognize accessibility features. Suzanne Edwards, Airbnb's head of hosting accessibility standards, said Airbnb agents are trained based on a rigorous set of accessibility photo standards. For instance, for a host to list an accessible parking spot, a private driveway at least 11 feet wide, or a parking spot designated for a person with disabilities with clear signage, they must show the proximity of the parking spot to the guest entrance, as well as the signage or markings for a designated accessible space, or capture the entire driveway with a parked vehicle if possible to show its width. How many features and homes have been approved? Airbnb says its staff has already reviewed and approved 100,000 accessibility features in 25,000 different homes globally. What are some of the accessibility search features that have been updated? Airbnb also updated its search filters for accessibility features. Some filters, like ones for step-free bedroom access and accessible parking spaces, will now be shown more prominently on the search screen. Airbnb made filters pertaining to wide entryways slightly more specific by adding a more precise measurement. For example, instead of wide entrance to bedroom, Airbnb changed it to bedroom entrance wider than 32 inches. As it stands, these 13 filters are still fairly limited. Airbnb also announced that it's making it easier to find accessible experiences, improving its 11 accessibility filters to allow guests to find activities near their rental that offer features like sign language, provide access to accessible bathrooms, take place on a flat surface, and more. Airbnb is also requiring hosts to submit detailed information about the accessibility measures they're taking, which then goes under review for description quality. Each experience listing will also clearly show its available accessibility features. Is there a reason for fewer accessibility filters? In 2017, a study found that Airbnb hosts were more likely to reject guests with disabilities, and in 2018, the company rolled out an accessibility update, adding 21 filters that let guests search for homes with wider entrances, accessible bathrooms, and more. The number of filters has since dropped to 13. Previous filters like wide clearance to bed and accessible height toilet and handheld showerhead are now missing from the current list. An Airbnb spokesperson said the company decided to simplify the list, stating to better serve our guests, and with input from our community and partners, we have updated the filters to make it easier for guests to find homes which suit their needs. One of those updates is simplifying to focus on essential and most used filters. Airbnb first started requiring hosts to upload photos of the accessibility features in their stays in 2019, but it's been long overdue for an update. We've continuously been working to improve our offerings with input from our community and with experts from the disability community, and we will continue to do so, Edwards said. Also from Cool Blind Tech, posted November 15th, how to add a legacy contact in iOS 15.2. Apple in iOS 15.2 is making it easier for your loved ones to access your personal data in the event of your death with the addition of a legacy contact feature. The legacy contact that you set will have access to your messages, photos, notes, and other sensitive data, plus the ability to remove activation lock from your devices, so it is an opt-in feature and should be reserved for your most trusted contact. iOS 15.2 is beta currently, but will launch in the public later this fall. Adding a legacy contact takes just a few steps, but both people involved in the process need to be running iOS 15.2 or later. Open the Settings app, Select your profile picture to get to your Apple ID settings. Select password and security. Select legacy contact setup. Select add legacy contact. At the pop-up screen that describes the feature, select add legacy contact. Authenticate with Face ID, Touch ID, or a password. Apple will suggest members of your family if you have a family sharing enabled. Tap on family member's name or select choose someone else to pick from your contacts list. Once a person has been selected, select next. Legacy contact setup 2. At the screen that describes how legacy contact works, select continue. Choose how to share your access key. You can send an iMessage to a contact with your key, or you can print a copy of it. Legacy contact share access key. Once you've sent a message or printed your legacy contact info, the person is officially set as the person who can request your data. Repeat the process if you want to set another legacy contact. You can have multiple. Legacy contact access key. For security purposes, Apple reviews all requests from legacy contacts before providing access to data. Your legacy contact will need access to your date of birth, your death certificate, and the access key that you set up. The access key is printed or set in an iMessage, and it must be saved in a secure location by the person who you have set as your contact. Apple provides a very long, multi-digit key that's a mix of letters and numbers and an easy-to-scan QR code. Apple provides the following information to your contact. As a person's legacy contact, you will be able to access data from that person's account and remove activation lock on their devices after their death. Because date of birth is used as an authentication measure, your birth date needs to be accurately set in your device's setting. You can ensure it's set by opening the Settings app, selecting your profile picture, selecting name, phone numbers, email, and adding or updating it by selecting the birthday listing. How your legacy contact can get your data when you die. In the event of your death, your legacy contact will need to collect the access key that was provided to them when they were set as a contact, as well as a copy of your death certificate. Apple instructs your legacy contact to visit digitallegacy.apple.com to begin the authentication process. The legacy contact will need to sign in with their Apple ID and provide the necessary information to Apple. So I guess you're SOL if your contact has an Android. From TechExplorist.com, study revealed the function of mysterious structure found on neurons, posted November 15th. For 3 decades, a mysterious cluster of proteins found on the cell body of neurons in the hippocampus has puzzled scientists. Highly conserved features are relatively unchanged through evolutionary timescales, suggesting they have an essential functional property in these very different types of animals. A new study has finally revealed what these clusters are. The UC Davis School of Medicine study has shown that these mysterious clusters of proteins are calcium signaling hotspots that activate gene transcription. Transcription allows portions of the neuron's DNA to be transcribed into strands of RNA that are then used to create the proteins needed by the cell. Scientists knew that these clusters are formed by a protein that passes potassium ions through membranes. What's more, these clusters have a particular type of calcium channel that allows calcium to penetrate cells. Inside the cells, the calcium triggers various physiological responses based on cell type. Disturbance to these clusters can cause severe neurological disorders, but the reason behind it remains unclear. To determine the function of the neuronal clusters, scientists came up with a new approach that allowed them to uncouple the calcium channel from the potassium channel clusters in neurons. Nicholas C. Vieira, a lead author for the study, said a key finding was that this treatment blocked calcium-triggered gene expression. This suggests that the calcium channel-potassium channel partnership at these clusters is important for neuronal function. Scientists tricked the calcium channels at these clusters for their experiment by flooding the neurons with decoy potassium channel fragments. They fell away from the clusters when the calcium channels grabbed onto the decoys instead of the real potassium channels. As a result, the process known as excitation transcription coupling, which links changes in neuronal electrical activity to changes in gene expression, was inactivated. Trimmer said there are a lot of different calcium channels, but the particular type of calcium channel found at these clusters is necessary for converting changes in electrical activity to changes in gene expression. We found that if you interfere with the calcium signaling proteins located at these unusual clusters, you eliminate excitation transcription coupling, which is critical for learning, memory, and other forms of neuronal plasticity. The study is expected to open up new avenues of research. Vieira said a lot of research has focused on calcium signaling in dendrites, the sites where neurons receive signals from other neurons. Calcium signaling in the cell body of neurons has received less attention. Now we understand much more about the significance of signaling at these specific sites on the cell body of the neuron. Trimmer said, "We are only at the beginning of understanding the significance of this signaling, but these new results may provide information that could shape new research into its role in brain function and perhaps eventually into the development of new classes of therapeutics." Journal reference, Nicholas C. Vieira, Samantha C. Odwai et al., Regulation of Neuronal Excitation Transcription Coupling by KV2.1-Induced Clustering of Somatic L-Type Calcium 2 Plus Channels at ERPM Junctions. The date of issue was October 10/73/PNAS.211009/4118. I intended to read this last piece from my uncle last week and ran out of time for my show. Things to ponder. Subject, things to ponder. Just saying. Number one, the inventor of the treadmill died at the age of 54. Number two, the inventor of gymnastics died at the age of 57. Number three, the world bodybuilding champion died at the age of 41. Number four, the best soccer player in the world, Maradona, died at the age of 60. And then, number one, the KFC inventor died at 94. Number two, the inventor of Nutella died at the age of 88. Number three, cigarette maker Winston died at the age of 102. Number four, the inventor of opium died at the age of 116 in an earthquake. Number five, Hennessy Cognac, Irish inventor, died at 98. How did doctors come to the conclusion that exercise prolongs life? The rabbit is always jumping, but it lives only 2 years. The turtle that doesn't exercise at all lives for 100 years. So, have a drink, take a nap, and when you wake up, have bacon and eggs. I guess with the right study group, you can prove almost anything. From PerkinsElearning.org, Paths to Technology. Paths to Technology is designed to assist educators and families in learning and staying current on ever-changing technology for students with visual impairments and blindness. The goal of this project is to enable students with visual impairments and blindness, VIB, to succeed in paperless mainstream classrooms and post-school opportunities for employment by achieving digital literacy and by staying current with rapidly evolving technology. Created as an interactive site, Paths to Technology will be a resource for defining and disseminating best practices, training, and support for teachers of the visually impaired, Braille transcribers, other education professionals, parents, and students themselves. Paths to Technology seeks to facilitate a community of practice related to technology and digital literacy, create and curate best practices that enable Braille transcribers and paraprofessionals to convert mainstream instructional materials to accessible digital materials, and a few other bullet points. I've run out of time for today's episode of Vision News. Be sure to listen next week. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Doris Hyde reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Vision News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina